97 of the Survival Podcast. It is Wednesday. That means it is interview day, and I've got kind of a different interview for you guys today. I have Julie Abels down in the green room. I'll have her in just a minute. We're going to be talking about making art today. That doesn't maybe sound very survival-y, but we're talking about on this show, and we have been talking about on the show for 18 plus years now, is really lifestyle design. And lifestyle design takes many forms, including through the eyes of the artist and through the eyes of independent business, right? So we're going to kind of combine both of those things here today, and we're taking this in a different way. And I think this is also really interesting to me, the way that Julie applied to be on the show, why making art still matters in an AI-driven world. There's a lot of things we have to wrestle with AI. I think it's an incredible tool. I teach classes on it. I have integrated into my business. For the last 3 years, I have developed multiple ways by which I use AI to accelerate and produce more of what I do on the air. But I will say that while AI makes a really great graphic for a video thumbnail or something like that, or a meme, it doesn't have the soul that an artist's work has. And so I think we're in this world now where we have kind of like the AI stuff here and the human stuff here. And where's the Venn? Where's the overlap? So we'll be talking about all types of stuff like that today in just a moment. Before we do, though, I want to remind you of a few things. Number one, the fall workshop doesn't go on sale this Saturday. It's next Saturday, the 19th. I have just published an article and a video for you guys detailing everything. I've got the schedule, the speakers, the topics, and most importantly, the menu. We're doing some crazy good stuff this year. I have a couple brand new sausages that you've never had before, including a beef and chicken Thai style sausage. We're going to be breaking down a whole lamb. We're going to be roasting that in a cajachina. Chef Ken is going to be doing a golden oyster mushroom soup to go with our sandwich bar, grass-fed beef burgers for one of the lunches, sirloin tamale. Like, this is going to be everything you've come to expect if you've been here before and more. We'll, of course, have a Boost Circle tasting and a bunch of other really cool stuff. If you've been wondering if Chef Michael Croft is going to be here running the kitchen because he's moved to Tennessee, he is coming down for the workshop, so he'll be here for that. So 3.5 days on my property, one of the biggest parties, learning experiences, networking events, special experiences you can have. Please consider coming. You need to be on the Telegram channel or group if you want to make sure you can get in. Generally, anybody that wants to come can, but if you sleep in 30 minutes, you don't get to come. It sells out that quick. So I want to remind you guys about that. Next up today, our sponsors of the day today. We're going to start off with Canine Academy. By the way, Joel Riles will be doing 2 presentations at the fall workshop, but his site, canineacademy.us, is where you can get trained and how to train your dog to make your dog a good citizen on the homestead, a good citizen in the home itself. Whether you want a protection dog, a working dog, a livestock guardian dog, all of it starts with core obedience. There's lots of courses you can take, including a free problem-solving library at canineacademy.us. So check them out today. Next up today is Above Phone. Flat out, guys, like, your phone spies on you. The app manufacturers that make the apps that go on your phone spy on you. The device, or not the, the device manufacturer itself spies on you. Your carrier spies on you. Like, who doesn't? And not only do they collect all your data, they send it, they sell it, you know, you say sell it to the highest bidder. They sell it to all the bidders. There's a price. They resell the same data over and over. You can make it all go away with an Above phone. If you're a member of my members program, you get $75 off. That's 1.5 years of your membership right there. And they will give you an Above phone expert to onboard you to your new device so you don't have any worries about learning to use a new device. So check out abovephone.com today. And with that, let's bring our special guest on, Julie Abels. Julie, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. You're right. This is a little different than what you normally do, but you have such a wide variety of topics that you talk about. So this is going to be great.
I think so. When I got your application, art, okay. But then when I read it, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is actually a really interesting thread to pull on and something to look deep into. What I always like to ask my guests, though, leading off is, how'd you become who you are? Like, when you were you like always into art? Like when you were in grade school and high school, did you study art? Is that what you always wanted to do? Or did somewhere along your life, along your course, you find this? Like, how does this all come together for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I did not ever consider myself an artist until pretty recently, right? So I started out in corporate America, worked there for maybe 6-7 years, did some real estate. I always have kind of an entrepreneurial bent to the way that I look at things. And so I've always had kind of side gigs. It wasn't until I started having babies in 2007 that things kind of changed. And I started, you know, looking at different ways of allowing myself to keep doing something while, you know, still having some of those side gigs. And so it's actually interesting kind of juxtaposition, like a confluence of roads, right? It was right around 2012. Where my oldest needed to probably start kindergarten. And my husband had started listening to you. We've actually been members since 2012. And so he and I would talk about some of your podcasts. And it started being one of those things where so many different areas of our life, we started thinking differently about what we were doing, right? And so it's around that time that we got chickens and started growing some food. And there's something about kind of swimming upstream in society, doing things a different way that then makes the next step a little bit easier to do something weird, if you know what I mean. And so when these ideas of homeschool started coming to us, and that's like a story for a whole nother day, the number of ways that just all these different areas that people were like, what about homeschool? What about this? What about this? I really resisted it at first. But then when we started homeschooling in 2012, it just worked really well for our family. So that's kind of how we started. We ended up doing a like a classical homeschool community. And the interesting thing about classical education is that it has, you know, a really specific way in how we go about learning. And that really helped to kind of reawaken my love of things like art and philosophy and things like that. So I think on one of your recent podcast episodes, you were talking about, you know, like not specializing and just, you know, continual learning and that kind of stuff. What my sister and I jokingly call our personal renaissance. Like, we're just like, keep learning new things, right? And so through this, I kind of got back into art. And my dad was always an artist, and I always was, I always thought, like, gosh, I can't compete with that, right? I was not the artist in the family. And so to be able to have this classical model of education that kind of gave me, like, here's a way to learn this that appealed to my kind of left brain engineering analytical type, like, we can learn anything with this model. That was really exciting to me. And so then I got into art, and, you know, I've always had a side gig. And so when I started blogging about art, that really took off. And turns out a lot of other homeschoolers needed help teaching their kids art. And so that was 10 years ago. And I've been doing this, this business of helping parents teach art, helping homeschoolers. And, I have quite a few clients that are charter schools, things like that. They usually don't have an art curriculum given to them. And then I teach adults as well, because I just find that's a lot of fun. It's really rewarding. And then I homeschool my kids. Well, I'm actually down to one now. I just dropped my oldest off at college. He's at Grand Canyon University. He's a freshman. So, yeah. I cannot hear you anymore.
That's because I muted it, because the F-35s were dive bombing my head again, and I forgot. Anyway, okay. Thanks for that. When I got your application, one of the sentences that hit me on it was that you say, making art forms us. What do you mean by that? Because that's a really cool concept.
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer that education is all about formation. Right. I think our kind of industrial model of education has a little too much focus on skills training, on job training. Right. And really what we want to be doing when we're educating kids or even educating ourselves is thinking about how this education is forming us. And art is a great kind of microcosm for that, in that we can really see its effects well. And so when we think about what does it mean to be human, and and how does education form us? It's, you know, what we expose our kids to, what do we wrestle with, what kind of, you know, tasks are we giving our kids? That's what's forming them. And so when you take something like making art, right, you have to struggle through the process. You have to really think about what do you want this to look like. You have to problem solve. And all of that is forming you. That's deep work. That's like what Cal Newport, I don't know if you ever read his book, Deep Work. That's what he's talking about with deep work. We're struggling with ideas. We're working through them. We're not just making it easy on ourselves. And I think that idea is so present in art, because when you see a kid sit down to try and make something, you can see them work through it and struggle through it. And especially older kids, you get like middle schoolers and high schoolers. And I think, and it's true for adults too, there's something about art that kind of makes us want to say, oh, I'm just not good at that. That's just not something I can do. I'm not the artist, right? And No, you can. You absolutely can. Anyone could do this. You just have to push through it. And that pushing through is part of what forms us, right? But I think this also connects into what scares people a little bit about AI. And I'll say right off the bat, I'm super optimistic about AI. Yeah. There are some negatives for sure, but I think it's also going to have a lot of positives, right? But a lot of the artist community has taken this idea of humans make art. And I think it's kind of led them to maybe a subconscious idea that because AI is, if we define art as something that AI can make, AI makes art, then is AI human, right? But that's backwards. That's putting the cart before the horse, right? Instead, being human is what makes us want to create. This is part of who we are. We are creative individuals, beings. This is part of what humans do. They create all the time. And so I think, you know, flipping that script and reminding people creating is not what makes us human. Being human is what makes us create. That's helpful in having that mindset shift, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And kind of when you were talking about the education system and how we are formed by art, what it makes me think of is something I've always said, that like the problem with the education system is you're trying to take a manufacturing process for inorganic things and apply it to organic beings that have their own free will.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with like, you get out into the world of like quantum physics, into the world of like the many worlds theory, that each time we make a decision, we bifurcate into another universe. I don't know that that's true, but it's true in this one, in that every time we make that decision, we branch off from where we could have went. And that means each and every single decision a human makes forms their life. And so it's something like doing a drawing, doing a painting, doing anything like that can have that same type of effect, because you're making every single stroke is a decision. I also think from what you were saying there, like another thing that I think of with that is art is not always a painting or a drawing. Like there's many forms of art. I do a lot of design work. It doesn't look like art, but it is my form of art. I'm not a painter, and I'm not going to be a painter. And I promise you, I'm not. I don't care if you say everybody can do it, right? Unless I'm going to do the crap that people call art that's not art, like tape a banana to a wall. That's not me. Doesn't mean that we can't express ourselves through various forms of art.
Absolutely. You know, my mom does a lot of gardening, and it is absolutely an art. She makes her backyard beautiful. She knows how to grow things. She has this expertise. And I think that's a lot of what we see in art. You see a master craftsman make some piece of furniture out of wood. That's an art. Absolutely. And I think, you know, you can see this in other subjects too, the formation, right? My kids are studying Latin, and part of, you know, people ask, why do we study Latin? And there's a whole bunch of reasons, but one of them is how it shapes your brain. Like it shapes the way that you're thinking, and all of education should really be doing that. We should have that as our foremost goal. We are shaping brains. We're shaping character. We're shaping individuals when we educate.
Very cool. So why does making something by hand still matter in a world where AI can generate like a polished image almost instantly? Like I can say, I want this scene to look like this and that, and I want this color depth of field or whatever. And, you know, in 30 to 90 seconds, depending on the tool, boom, there it is.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of use cases where using AI for images absolutely makes sense. So, for example, I recently talked to someone who was creating a robotics club for his homeschool group, right? So this is for kids. There is no profit in it. It's not even a 503c. It's just a robotics club. And he wants a logo for his group so they can have stickers, right? So a great use of AI, make that logo, have AI help you with that. And he did, and he made some stickers and the kids were happy, right? Great use of AI. There are times on my website where I'll have blog cover images that are AI. And I'm super honest about it. I try and label everything so people can see what's what, partly because I think I want people to see what AI can do and be impressed with that. So there are absolutely times when using AI is the right thing. And I think what you have to do is step back and ask yourself, what is the goal, right? If it's just to have that quick image, then use the tool that connects, that makes sense with that goal. There are other times that making art is much more about the process than the product, right? Especially in education. So when we think about art, making art, that process has so many benefits that if you have AI do it for you, you're shortchanging yourself. Like you're missing out on all the benefits of creating that art. And so I think you really have to step back and think, what is the goal of this project? If it's education, if it's formation, if it's developing judgment skills, like decision-making skills, like developing your taste in art, you're going to have to interact with art much more than just generating an AI image, if that makes sense. So
it makes tons of sense. I think it's part of like, do I want the experience? Like what I use when it comes to image generation with AI, what I'm actually creating is something that I would have went to a contractor to make for me, a graphics artist to make for me. Like I am doing that as a means to an end. It's a tool.
Exactly.
Right. Where like, you know, I don't paint, I don't draw, but like, you know, I do some pretty awesome woodwork. And to me, that's a form of my art. If I just wanted a really nice finished piece of furniture, I could just buy it, right? Why am I doing it? Because it's something that I take pride in, that I enjoy the experience as much as the outcome with. In a lot of ways, I think art is analogous to many other things. And maybe other things are just forms of art that we don't call art. Like I'm a bow hunter, right? And to me, there's magic in the way that an arrow flies. There is a certain level of skill required to do that type of hunting. It's very primitive. It's very one-on-one. It's a whole different experience than going out with a gun where I can shoot something 300 yards away from a rest. Not that everybody can do that. Not that it's like pushing a button for AI, but there's a big difference. And so I think to me, like art is really about what goes into it, where it's just the output. And like you said, there's use cases for each. And so what is the goal? If the goal is to produce something with soul in it, then I see art. If the goal is to produce marketing collateral, you know, maybe AI is fine for that. It's not like we've been using really talented artists to do that for the last 25 years. We've been using Photoshop to do that. Like they're just different worlds to me.
They're different tools, right? And the more tools that we have, the more the field is opened up to more people to make stuff, right? So the gatekeepers are gone, and that means that we end up with some low quality stuff, but we also end up with the freedom for more and more people to create, right? And so I think it's a net positive.
And when we get back to more traditional, like painting and drawing, what are some of the life skills developed, especially if we're teaching that to children?
Right. So I tend to think of the skills that art teaches in kind of three different categories: the personal, the kind of relational or community, and kind of the spiritual. And so with kids, you know, I think that those personal skills are kind of the key ones that we seem to see. So we see skills like fine motor skills, right? They're developing their attention, forcing yourself to slow down, notice details. If you're trying to draw something, you have to stop and notice the details, right? So that develops attention span. It helps with memory. There's nothing like drawing something to help you know what it really looks like, right? Yeah. Visual literacy, just the idea of expressing yourself in shapes and such, and creativity. I'm a big advocate that creativity is, I define it as kind of a new mashup of existing things. There's nothing new under the sun. All art is taking existing things and reconfiguring them in some way. And so that has to be developed through the practice, right? There's nothing like a situation that demands creativity to help you develop creativity. Just like the situation that demands muscle strength is the one that helps you build those muscles. So I think those personal, that's the skills that I see kids developing most in those, in the art that they're working on.
So what I hear you saying is you're like training observation, attention, patience, judgment, perseverance.
Right, right.
And so these are life qualities, right, that we want our children to develop regardless of what they do. Like, and I, you know, I do think back, like I said, I'm not an artist in that face, but we had art, like in school, we had art classes. I don't know if they do that anymore. And I don't mean an elective in high school. I mean, like, you know, grade school, just like there was an art class in every grade where like, and you weren't really judged on how good you were. It was more like, honestly, I think it was to give the teacher a break, but it also does unlock those things in a student.
Yeah. So there's a whole other category. I think of like character formation. And I think this is really strong in kids too, right? So that, you know, personal judgment and discernment, the problem solving, decision making, you're confronting kids with a choice of what color, what composition, where do I put where? And that forces them to make those decisions. So it's building decision making skills, things like patience and focus and perseverance, right? Even confidence, right? That tolerance for uncertainty. These are things that are not often seen in our education system because so much is kind of scripted out. Right. So here's an open-ended thing that you have to do. Right. And even helping kids understand this idea of creation instead of just consumption. And this, I don't have really great words for this, but this idea of if you're never creating, then you lose kind of knowledge of what it takes to create. And you see some kids that kind of have this destructive mindset. They can just go through and destroy things. Well, I think that's from never creating. You gain this respect for creation when you've spent some time creating.
Yeah, I think that we would be a lot better served if many of our people were creating something, right? Whether it's the type of art you teach and do yourself, or whether it's building something from, you know, wood or from metal. To me, all of these things are forms of art. When I look at like the cabinetry that we had put in here about 10 years ago and the guy that did it, that dude's an artist. I don't care if he calls himself an artist. What that guy did with Nadia Alder was artwork, right? And I think that people that build things value things a hell of a lot more than people that break things. And I'm a dude, and when we're a little boy, I broke stuff. Like, that's what you do when you're a kid. But building is important too. And we tend to defend things that we build over things that were built for us. And I think when we build things, we tend to defend the building of others as well, because we recognize what went into it. And I think one of our big problems in society is not enough people build anything, not enough people do anything. They are fully on the consumption side instead of the creation side. And so it's so easy to like want to tear down anything that's, you know, from politics to construction to anything in between, when you've never actually put the blood, sweat, and tears into building something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Art, you know, we've been mainly talking about this, how it's valuable for children, right? That's kind of the angle we've taken. You're a homeschooler, you help with homeschooling, you help with charter schools. Learning is really the domain of children in many ways. I think we all should be learning every day, but children are so hungry to learn. How does that translate to the benefits of learning and training in art for adults?
Yeah, so this is really important. I mentioned those kind of personal and like relational community and then spiritual. And I think with the adults, at least my experience in teaching adults, I have about two classes a month that I go in and teach for adults up at a local gallery. And in my experience, they really connect more on that kind of relational community side and that spiritual side. And so what I mean by that is that our culture and our ideas are kind of, they're translated, they're communicated through art. And I think because we've lost so much of that in our culture, this is an opportunity for people to kind of sit down and have that shared experience and have that connection and make those memories, right? So sometimes I'll see like a mother-daughter or a couple of friends come in together, and just that relational connection is really important. And there's something about making art together that's a little different. And again, I absolutely use the word art very loosely, right? Mm-hmm. Creating together that gives you that bonding. And I think there's something about having art that kind of preserves culture over and over again. Mm. And so for kids, right, kids are mostly creating things that, you know, probably nobody wants to keep. Generally, some of it is just developing skill, right? But but some of it is they don't have the understanding of the culture, right, in order to be able to know what to create and pass on. So we see that more in adults. And then I think there's a spiritual element to it. When, you know, we're created to create, this is who we are. And so when you connect with that, it is settling and therapeutic in a way that I think surprises people. I often have adults tell me, like, man, I'm more relaxed now than I have been in months, right? When they finish with a class, because they sat down and they created and they did this slow kind of detailed process, which is not our normal kind of world of doom scrolling and trying to create really, really fast. So
what's lost when we put too much focus on the finished product versus the creation process? Because that's what, like, the shortcut AI is I say I want a thing and it makes a thing, right? And I think we're going to get to the point where, like, that even enters the 3D world. Like, there's a lot of design work that goes into things like 3D printing, but I see very soon a prompt will generate a piece of code that I'll drop into a 3D printer. It'll actually make a thing in the real world. And then that's advancing, and that can be, you know, graphite. It can be metallic. Like, we're actually getting into a world where we can be creating stuff using this technology. But I think if we're only focused on that, we lose something in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all those benefits that come out of the process that we end up losing. And I think we lose that community kind of the way that we connect with each other. You know, we talked about don't just be a consumer. This we're growing our ideas about what does it mean to create and what does it take to create, right? And we're also growing our taste, right? Our discernment, our judgment. And so I think the more you have AI do for you, the more you are not working to develop what is good and what is not good. Mm. And so if you can stop and do some creating for yourself, all of a sudden you naturally develop opinions on what is good and what's worth keeping. Right. And I think we see this, with kids and writing, right? We give kids assignments to write something, but they don't have enough background ideas in their head yet. They don't actually have opinions yet. And so they're trying to write something without that background. They don't know. They're like, what do I write? Right. You get an adult talking. Maybe they don't want to write because they haven't developed the skill of writing. But most adults have opinions about things. Right. We've lived long enough and had enough experience. And so I think the more we have AI do things for us, I don't want to say the less opinionated we become, because humans are naturally opinionated.
Yeah.
But I do think we tend to become less discerning.
Maybe there's less behind our opinions. We might still have them, but why do we have them? We don't really know. I think we lose something when we don't learn how to do things with a manual process, right? Like, I'm not a Luddite. I want to get rid of all the technology or whatever. But like, when we stop using skills, they degrade. Like, you want to see bad handwriting, let me write something, especially in cursive, right? And I went to Catholic school where, like, we were judged on it like it was calligraphy class, right? Which is part of why I hated it, because I just don't have that particular skill set, especially being a one-eyed guy. I think that doesn't help. But if I try to write now, like, I always tell people, like, they'll say, well, you signed your book for me. And I'm like, you know, if it ever matters economically that I signed a book, and they do the thing like they do on Pawn Stars where the expert comes in, they're going to have no idea, because every single one of them looks different. So that is because I don't write in cursive. I don't write very often. I maybe make a couple notes on a piece of paper. That's about it. Pretty much I'm a typist. So I can type really good. I can type 85 words a minute, but I can't write. So what we do, we get better at, and the skills we practice, we retain. So my concern with things like AI, even just taking it to business, is the reason I can do what I can do with AI is because I have 30 years of experience in business and building businesses and marketing and operating businesses and handling employees and doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that, then I would not be able to get what I get out of AI. Right.
Yep, and so absolutely.
I think that we have to maintain what I call in the book. One of the books I'm working on right now is the mailroom. Right. And what I mean by the mailroom is it's a metaphor. It's not a direct thing, but it is a direct thing for some businesses where like large corporations, a lot of times, like your entry level position was you're a mailroom clerk. Right. You shove stuff up the tubes. You deliver stuff to desks and stuff like that. And that's less of a thing now because everything's electronic. But that used to be like the entry point or a typing pool or something like that. And so every business needs a mailroom, that place that the first person comes into and they learn the business from the bottom up. And so for like lawyers, like a lawyer comes into a firm after they get out of law school and pass the bar. And the first thing they do is like live in the pit for 2 years, slogging through contracts and what have you. But that's part of what makes them eventually, if they become them, great lawyers, because they had that mailroom experience. And I think whether it's art, whether it's business, whether it's history, any form of knowledge, any form of creation, if we immediately go to the AI tool, we don't build the memory, the muscle, the capability of actually doing something original, because I feel like what I do with AI is original. But when I see other people that don't have the background just throw stuff out, like I don't have to read the words of an AI written piece. I don't have to read it. You know, I can be 10 feet from the screen without my glasses on. I can't read it. I'm AI. There's a waveform in there that does not look like a human did it. And like AI images are beautiful, but you also go AI. Mm-hmm. Instantly, you know that.
Yeah.
And it, so if you think back to like when I was in school, what was the big lie? You know, the big lie, you won't have a calculator everywhere you go. And I'm like, well, actually, right. But I'm still glad I learned how to do math.
Yeah.
And I think we need to look at all these different skills, art, math, business, grammar. It's great to use these tools, but I think we need like the on-ramp, and then we can decide what I do for the sake of doing it and what I do for the sake of the output.
Absolutely. And like math's a great example with the calculator. I love that as an analogy, because if you don't take some time to learn your math facts, then when you're doing algebra, if you have to stop and plug in everything into a calculator, you're so slow that you can't get your math done in time, right? And then you move to calculus and right. And so because math builds on itself the whole time, having that math facts, even if sometimes you stop and check yourself because you can't quite remember 7 times 8, because that was always the hard one, right? Like most of the time your brain can keep up with that. And so it's starting to multitask and do more and more, right? So absolutely. And I think we have to be able to have those kind of basic level of ideas. It's like apprenticeships. And I wonder if apprenticeship programs will start to come back more, right? As we don't, if AI can do those low level stuff in the workplace. And like my oldest son, he's majoring in engineering. And so like, I'm like, okay, I don't know what the future of engineering is. You have to be ready to pivot and change and do all sorts of stuff. But I do know that having those base level skills is going to help you. I don't know what the first couple of years out of college looks like. I don't know if people want to hire engineers out of college, but if you have all these skills and you have a lot of flexibility, you will find something to do in the workforce. Mm.
How can AI help people improve their artistic skills rather than bypass them? Like one of the things I've realized is like with one of my AI courses, basically I take my old consulting process and then I built a workflow that lets you get what you would have gotten out of my consulting to a degree for $300 instead of $30,000, right? So like I'm using AI as a tool to guide the person through the process versus saying, go to AI and say, design my business for me.
Right, right. So you have that judgment, that discernment, you have that experience. And so you're able to direct AI, right, to create this and then help someone else. And I think that's the mindset that you have to have, right? So I always like to ask myself, what is AI freeing me up to do? And I think if you are, you're trying to learn some art, right? It's hard to have time for everything. So how do we make this? How do we streamline this? Have AI help you come up with an idea. Have you help come up with reference photos? Reference photos is one of my most common uses for AI. This is why I use ChatGPT's Codex instead of Claude or Grok or whatever. ChatGPT made Dolly and the image generation. And so, you know, Codex is their agent and Dolly is inside of that. And so when you ask ChatGPT or Codex, either one, to create an image, it does a really good job of it. And you can create reference images. And it turns out that when you're learning to draw, it is a lot easier to draw from a line drawing than from a photo. Right. So AI can help you by getting you. I have something I call the progression of drawing activities. And the idea is that, you know, if somebody's explaining to you step by step how to draw something, that's a little easier. And then you have like drawing from a line drawing, drawing from a black and white photo, drawing from life, drawing from an idea. That's how it just keeps getting harder. And so I tell my students all the time, when you find yourself struggling, like everything you do should be easy plus one. The idea of not totally easy, but you don't want to overwhelm yourself with too hard. And so, which is an idea I actually got from Andrew Poudois, who does a writing curriculum. So this idea of how can I make this a little challenging for me, but not too much? AI can step in and help you do that. It can create that line drawing for you, for example. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would even be useful for like art appreciation concepts as well, like because you could take an image and say, what would this look like if it was done as an impressionist, right? Like, I'm not going to throw a bunch of words because I don't know a lot of them, but like, you know, or what would this look like if it had been done by Van Gogh, or what would this look like if it had been done by Picasso, right? And so you can then start to see how images translate into other forms of art.
And, absolutely.
You know, like I remember when I was talking to this guy one time, and I never went to college, but I was like, you know, if I went to college, like certain things I wouldn't do. And I'm like, I wouldn't take art. And he's like, well, take art appreciation. Right. Because you don't have to be judged on what you can build, but you can learn to better understand the world by looking through the lens of art. And so I think there's probably a lot of opportunity with things like that as well.
Absolutely. And one of the great things, you know, AI does sometimes hallucinate, although it's gotten so much better about that recently. But the art appreciation is we're usually looking at so much older art. So we've got centuries of art that we can go back and look at. And so there's not as much hallucination in that area because like kind of everyone agrees when Van Gogh died, right? Like there's not as much wrong information on the internet, and therefore there's not as much hallucinated information in AI. So it's great for that. It can help you to understand when you start getting an art appreciation, you start seeing how they've categorized different periods of history, right? And I've got blog posts on this as well, but it's this idea of we can kind of see the art community react to culture and culture react to art. And so this pendulum kind of swings back and forth between things that are really realistic and things that are more focused on the ideas and less on the realism. So AI can help you see those ideas and help you kind of understand what you're looking at and explain it to you like six different ways. And so patient. I love how patient AI is.
Yeah, it's patient because it doesn't care, right?
Right.
I am not the most patient operator of AI, but it itself will tolerate just about anything. I think also like one of the things, and I'm trying to think of how this would be unlocked with working with art, but I have found one of the superpowers of AI is if you don't understand something, saying, explain this to me, you know, like I'm in 10th grade. Right. Or explain this to me like I'm in kindergarten. Right. And then it will change the way it explains the concept. And then all of a sudden you get it and say, well, now, like, let's start ramping it up. Now explain it to me like I'm a PhD student. Right. Because now I understand the core underlying component. And I would think there's probably a lot of ways to maybe not use it exactly that way, but to take that angle and use it with art and art creation.
Absolutely. And some of it is asking ChatGPT or Grok or, you know, Claude, whatever, ask it to critique your art, right? Upload an image. So sometimes I'll upload my reference image and upload my drawing and ask it, where did I go wrong? Like something looks off about this guy's face. And it knows, like it can analyze those things so well. It's like, oh, look, the eyes are a little too far apart. And it turns out that the human brain is super picky when looking at human faces, probably because we've all looked at human faces for more of our life than anything else. And so not only are we able to know when a human face looks normal, we're also able to recognize, you know, Joe versus Jim. We can recognize these differences. And so especially if you're trying to do something really hard, like capture the likeness of a person while drawing, one little tiny little mistake, anything off is going to look wrong. But AI can figure that out and can tell you exactly what that is and can tell you how to fix that. Oh, just narrow his jaw a little bit more and then it'll look more like him. And so, I, those sorts of things, asking it to critique, it's really good at.
Yeah, I've been told the hardest things to draw, paint, or sculpt are a face, a hand, or a foot. That those are like the biggest challenges. I don't draw, so I don't really know, but that seems to track pretty well. And then you look at like a true master like Da Vinci and like his drawings of like a hand with the skin off, like an anatomical drawing, and you go, the level of capability and genius that must have taken, right? And like, so that would be one of my fears with art. Like if we let AI take over instead of collaborating with AI, do we never get another Da Vinci? Do we never get somebody like that? And I guess my trade-off with that and answering my own question is that person's going to be that person no matter what. Right. In fact, what would Da Vinci do with AI? That would actually be really kind of cool to see what that would be like.
That would be interesting. And I do think some people love drawing. I always have kids that love to draw, love art. And so I think if that's what you enjoy doing, you're going to get out and do it anyway. Right. If you like to mow the lawn, you're going to mow the lawn, even though you could hire someone else to do it or you could find a robot that would do it. You enjoy doing it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So how can we use AI to improve artistic skills? You kind of mentioned one way there already. Are there some other ways, rather than just bypassing it, that we actually can become better at whatever our medium of art is by using AI?
Yeah, absolutely. So start with the goal. Like what skill are you working on? And then keep the goal small because we learn best when we're learning in small chunks. And then ask AI, hey, how can you help me with this skill? I want to learn this. How can you help? And AI is pretty good at helping you help yourself, right? And so you can ask like, hey, I'm trying to come up with, some drawing prompts, and it will help you brainstorm drawing prompts. Now, they might not all be good because, again, AI doesn't have that judgment and discernment on what makes a great drawing prompt, but try some of them and you will start to develop your own discernment on what is a good drawing prompt. So things like that, I think adapting different lessons for different ages, especially parents and teachers, if you're teaching art, like being able to be like, oh, this looks fun, but I don't know if my third grader can do it, ask AI, like, here's our art lesson plan, especially in the homeschool world where you're often teaching kids of different ages. Say, I have a 5, 8, and a 12-year-old doing this project. Do you think I need to modify anything, right? And so AI can help you with that. It can help you connect. You know, anytime you can connect two subjects together, I think our modern school system also tends to, unfortunately, silo subjects.
Yeah.
And like we live in a universe. It's all connected, one. And so ask ChatGPT or whoever to help you connect those things. How can I connect my art and my history together? And that's what most of my art lesson plans do. We connect art and history, and it's a great overlap because then you learn, you remember so much more about both the art and the history because you had that connection, right? So those are just all great ways to use AI without letting it take over.
Yeah, when you said art and history, the first thing in my mind is art is history and history is art. And then the next thing that popped in my mind was every Dan Brown novel I've ever read. Right?
Right?
Because the art is so woven into the symbology and the storylines and things like that. And there's so much that we know about our past only because of the art. Like we literally know what some of the Roman emperors looked like. Because of art. We know what some of the masters look like because they created their own images, right? Maybe they made themselves look a little bit better, and maybe the emperor had his abs chiseled a little bit more. But we know what people looked like at the time. And I think the most important thing we gain from that is they don't look much different than we do today.
Yeah,
we look through history and we think, well, that's like, I think black and white television maybe papered our brains a little bit when we were kids. And I'm old enough to remember that, you know, and like you think, well, in the 20s, everything was dark and black and white. Well, no, it was the same vibrant colors that it is today. And the artists, you know, unless they did like a charcoal drawing or a black and white drawing on purpose, you know, they used the colors, they used the full spectrum. And because of that, we know so much about history that we wouldn't know.
Absolutely. And what was important to people in that time, right? What did they value?
That's true.
Right. That's really clear through art. But, you know, art can help with science, too, right? Like, I don't know if you had any science labs in high school where you had to draw what you saw. right? It's not that you're going to have a perfect drawing. It's that that cements it into your memory. It makes you notice more. Even language arts, right? Sometimes we have our kids write papers and draw a picture to go with them. And I think this is super funny, especially with the younger kids. You start to see a lot of differences between the boys and the girls. I think it was Leonard Sachs has a book called Why Gender Matters, and he talks about a lot of differences. But one thing that always stuck with me from that book is he says girls draw nouns and boys draw verbs, right? And so a lot of times girls drawing when you have young elementary school kids, the girls' drawings are like cute and tidy because they're drawing nouns. They're drawing things that are still and not moving. Whereas the boys tend to be like, even as infants, their eyes will track the movement, right? Yeah. And so these boys are drawing verbs, and it turns out drawing verbs is a lot harder. So you try and draw explosions and running people, like that's actually harder. And so you end
they're
up with
a lion, which is a noun, but they're drawing it in motion, right?
Yeah,
growling, roaring, hunting, right? Yeah, I get what you're saying.
And so it ends up looking a little messier in nature because they're drawing that movement, but it's still helping them to communicate their ideas, right? So it helps with all the different subjects.
Yeah, the movement is interesting. Like there is this phenomenon that like a husband will go to the refrigerator and go, "Don't see the ketchup. Where is the ketchup?" And the wife walks right in and goes, "There." And it's because we have this preconceived idea of what it should look like. And somebody turned the bottle, so now it doesn't. It's right there, but it doesn't look like it's supposed to. And there was this like one like short form creator Asian dude, and he was like, "I explained to you." He goes, "Woman, see berry, no move, pick, bring home food. Man, go jungle, see animal, move, kill, bring home food. That's why you don't find ketchup." Right. And like, I like, you know what? He's being funny and he's using shtick and he's overemphasizing the accent and all. But he's got a point that we are different and we do perceive things differently. And it certainly makes sense that that would be reflective in any sort of creation or artwork that we would do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the comments that came up was the idea of, you know, there are exceptions to this as well. Right.
Sure.
So turns out, funny enough, my husband is way better at finding things than I am.
Okay.
We joke that he's the family finder because anything that's lost, we ask him and he finds it. Right. So, I mean, there are exceptions, right? And he, you know, I don't know why he's better at finding things. He's probably better at noticing details, really. But
okay. What would you say to an adult that believes they're just like, "I'm not artistic"?
Well, we talked a little bit, right, about this broad interpretation of what is art, what is artistic. So I would challenge you first and foremost to back up and look at all sorts of different things that you create. What are you actually creating? Because that's probably an art form. And then second, I would say, like, look, you don't have to identify as an artist. I found it very difficult. I got back into doing art in 2016 and I have been working on it since. I've been developing my art skills. I still find it very difficult to say I am an artist. Like, there's just a lot of baggage that comes with that word. So I would challenge people to let go of that baggage as they can. I absolutely think that anybody can be an artist. You just need to find your medium, find what you enjoy making. And then the next thing I would say is really look into the classical model of education, because it really will break down kind of how to start with basics, start with learning the vocabulary of your subject, start with, you know, those basic. So in drawing, for example, we start with basic shapes. First, can you draw a circle? Okay, now we're going to make it into a sphere. We're going to learn value, right? We're trying to break it up into small chunks. And this is why I wrote my Anyone Can Teach Art book. It's about using the classical model to teach art, because if we break any subject down into its basic shape, to its basic ideas, then you can learn it, right? Same way with learning Latin, any of these things. We need to break it down. And I think our culture has these really weird ideas about art that, like, some people are just born with this skill. And there are some people that come by it easier than others, right? It, like, every person is unique and different. And some of us come by certain things easier than another. But just because one person is more athletic than another person doesn't mean you can't ever learn to play basketball. You may not be a pro, but you can go shoot some hoops, right? And so art's the same way. You might not be the next Michelangelo, but you can learn to make things with clay, right? So I would just like help people just step back, let go of all the ideas that come from the words art and artistic, and just say, what can I create? And move further. Ask AI, I want to create this. How do I get started?
So what are some simple, inexpensive ways for individuals or families to begin regularly making art?
So if you're making the more traditional art forms, right, you're thinking of like drawing and painting and sculpting and stuff. I think one of the best ways is to start out with an art lesson plan already created for you. And this is why I made a ton of art lesson plans. They're on my website. The idea that if you haven't done a lot of art making and you just start scrolling Pinterest, you're just as likely to get a ridiculously difficult project as you are to get something that's more appropriate for beginners. So I would start with kind of a trusted source. You can look up a local class, have fun doing a local class together, or just, you know, find some web source that's made by a person that has, you know, said this is actually for beginners. The next thing, if you're like, look, there's nothing like that, I can't find anything, if you just want to start drawing, I would encourage you to start with tracing. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, tracing is cheating. It's not. It is a tool for learning. It is a great tool for learning. If you will be mindful about tracing, you will learn to draw things. This is how everybody learns to write their letters, right? When we're teaching cursive or even print penmanship in school, we start them by tracing letters. Why? Because you're developing the muscle memory, you're developing the fine motor skills, you're being able to see what that letter really looks like. And here's the thing, if you will find a simple drawing and trace it 10 times and then try and draw it, you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed at how much you picked up in those 10 tracings. In fact, I would challenge you, try looking at, find your image, whatever you want to draw. I would suggest a line drawing, so not like a photo. Try and just look at it and draw it once. The first result will probably be kind of funny if you've never been drawing. Then trace it 10 times and try to draw it again. I think you'll be wowed. Tracing's a great learning process. So that's a great way to start as well. And then, of course, I have a bunch of different resources for people. My website, ridgelightranch.com. I just made anyone can learn to draw video course that takes people all the way through a full year of drawing practices and video lessons and such. So there's a lot of resources out there and you can absolutely do it. Have some short practiced intervals. Don't try and just draw for 4 hours one day. You're better off to draw for 10 minutes a day every day.
Yeah, I find it interesting you say that people think tracing is cheating. So like when you take a little kid and you're teaching them basketball, like you mentioned earlier, and you give them a lower rim until they can actually hit the rim before you put them at 10 feet, is that cheating or is that developing the skill?
Exactly.
Right? It makes me think of my wife with art. My wife is actually pretty good at drawing. But what she'll say is, well, I'm not really, because I have to look at something to draw it. In other words, she can't see it in her head and draw it. And I'm like, well, I can see shit in my head all the time, but I can't draw it at all. So I think you're doing better than me. Like, I can literally look at something that, like a deck, and it's a quarter inch off level, and I can, in my head, see where the corner of that deck should be. And I can do that at a distance. And I don't know if it's because I have one eye and it's some kind of weird reverse gift or something, but I can, like, if you say, like, that deck is going to come 10 feet off that wall, I can, which direction is the wood going to go? I can see it. I can't draw it. But if I show her a picture of it, she can draw it perfectly. And
so
all have different ways that we perceive and express ourselves.
Right. And that's that mix of what comes easy to you versus what skills have you developed.
Yeah.
Tell your wife, I absolutely still need to see things to draw them. There are very few things I can draw from memory, and they're only things that I've drawn a million times.
Yeah. 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 I get that. And I think there's, like, you can learn things, and then there's some things maybe you can't learn. Like, I can't teach you to see things the way I can see them. To, like, literally see a shape and visualize it over another shape. Why I can't draw it, I don't know, because you would think that would be the key to that. But, you know, I think the other thing is, like, what do you want to do? What are you motivated to do? Like, I don't care enough to learn how to draw. Just to be blunt, like, I care more about what the finish on a knife handle looks like than being able to draw the knife.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. Like, you know, Patrick Rohrman, who makes knives and makes these beautiful knives, I'd say that guy's not just an artist at making a knife. He's an artist when it comes to sharpening a blade. I've seen the dude literally split a hair. I mean, as shave pieces off of a single hair, right? That is a different form of artistry. And I think that, like, instead of saying, like, I'm not artistic, maybe I feel like everybody's an artist. It's just, what's your medium? What is the thing that you have enough passion about to develop the skill in to express yourself through it?
Right. And find what that is. Like, if you don't have anything, then go searching for it. Go find what it is that you have that passion for. There's a book, Joseph Piper, I think it is, Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And he talks about the word scolae, which is big in the classical education circles. But it's this idea of these things that we do because of the passion that we have for them. It's you need ways that you're having fun and it, being creative and creating. Find those things. they're teasing Garmin, you in the comments. I see this.
Garmin says that Jack is like Odin. He gave him an eye so he can visualize things that aren't really there yet.
There you go.
So really, it's been a great discussion. A lot of good, cool stuff came out of it. Tell people about your book, your podcast, your website, what you do, anything you want to cover right now.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been a fun discussion. So my book is called Anyone Can Teach Art, and it's all about using the classical model of education to teach art. And I published it in 2020. So kind of an awkward year to publish a book, but it's been out there for several years. You can buy it in ebook, audiobook. It is digitally narrated in audiobook, or you can get a full print color copy. And it has images inside of it of a lot of famous works of art. So that's why it is color inside. And my website is Ridgelight Ranch. So it's kind of named after this multi-acre, 3.3-acre property that we got. And I love seeing the light on the mountains. So if you can just imagine this beautiful alpenglow of light on the mountains, that's the light on the ridge. That's why it's called Ridgelight Ranch. And if you guys go to ridgelightranch.com/TSP, I do have a little free gift there for you guys. Just a nice little download that I think will be helpful. I'm not super active on social media, but you can find me on Facebook and Instagram as Ridgelight Ranch. So check that out. And then if you're interested in learning to draw, I worked all summer making this Anyone Can Learn to Draw video course. So I'm really excited about it. I've got kind of a group going through it this year, and I think it's great. It's based on the in-person class that I've been teaching at our local homeschool community and at our local gallery. So taught the same stuff to adults and kids both.
So. And then you've got a podcast as well.
So I do. So my podcast is kind of definitely on hiatus, but it's called Anyone Can Teach Art. And so my sister and I started it prior to COVID, and we talk about a lot of famous artists. So if you're just wanting to like learn about some different artists, we have different art ideas. And so it's all the episodes are still up there. In 2020, when her husband came home from work and her kids came home from school, then the house was crazy and loud. We couldn't find a quiet time to record. So we stopped recording then, and I've just never picked it back up. I do think about it sometimes. We'll see. It's still out there and I may pick it back up, but it's just, talking about art concepts and a lot of art history. So especially if you're teaching art as a homeschooler and you want to just put it on in the car, it's very kid friendly. You and your kids can listen to it together, find an episode that's the artist you're studying, and you can learn more about him and his life. And I think those stories about the famous artists really make the art coming alive, right? Like learning that Michelangelo was super grumpy, and you know, you can imagine him trying to paint the Sistine Chapel and everybody doesn't like him.
I would be grumpy laying on my back 4 inches from a roof for six
right? Whereas like apparently Raphael was quite the ladies' man and party animal, right? And so you start to get some of these kind of personality elements attached to these different artists, and they really comes to life. It makes them more human and more memorable.
I'm not going to say it. You'll have to come see it in the video if you want to see that comment about Jack being Odin with ducks instead of ravens. Anyway, this is great. Again, ridgelightranch.com is the website. Julie's stuff, I have all the links she sent me that will be in the audio notes on the audio side at the survivalpodcast.com. If you're watching the video, there's a link, right? The first link in the video notes below We'll take you over to that. If you click it right now and you're watching us live, it's not there because we're not done yet. We're almost done. It'll be about 30 minutes after the live ends that stuff will be there. So if you're in your car, somebody, you want to check this stuff out, you don't have to pull over and write it down or whatever. Just go to the Survival Podcast, pull up episode 3897, or if you're watching the video, click the link, and you'll be able to get all those resources. Julie, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. This has been fun.
All right, guys, as we wrap up here, I want to remind you again about the fall workshop going on sale on the 19th. I also want to remind you about the next AI course is going on sale on the 14th. That's this coming Monday. It is not the big giant $300 one. This is a $100 course. But the first people to get in, the first 100 people to get it for $69. The second 100 people get it for $79, and then it goes up to $99. This is a course to find the business that's right for you. We've put a lot into this. We developed it really quickly, but we developed it on a methodology that I've used in consulting for a long time, where first we're going to examine you, the founder, and figure out what makes sense for you. Then we're going to find businesses that actually fit you. So we're going to examine you before we even talk about businesses. Then we're going to go through and we're going to red team you and red team the businesses to eliminate things. We're going to spit out by day 15 a 60-day business plan for one primary business. You get all of that. It's self-directed, self-led. You move at your own pace. The only reason to make sure you're aware of the launch time is because you get the discount. This is kind of a new thing for us, so we want you to know about that. The other thing you can always do to help this show and the work that we do is do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. We just went through a major kind of renovation here in the home. I wouldn't really say a remodel. But I remodeled my office. That's why I've got the acoustics behind me. I did wood flooring in here. We put wood flooring through the whole living space of the house. We redid our bedroom. And as we were doing that, we also kind of redid our kitchen a little bit, freshened the paint. All that meant everything came off the walls. I'm a big cook. You guys know that. I like to have lots of seasonings and spices. I end up with them all over the counter, and then my wife yells at me. So we got these little shelves we put up on the wall, and they were okay. When we did the remodel, I want to find new ones. So I went out and I found these little shelves by a company called Mean Good. And I really, really like them. The spice jars I use, they let me do 9 across, 2 deep, so 18 per shelf. So I got 36 of them sitting there. Look, I didn't need AI to tell me what 18 and 18 were. But what I like about them is the way they're set up. And the big thing that I really like about them is how they mount to the walls. The old ones that I had they were true floating. So you mounted your bolts and your screws and then you slipped over them and you slid it to the side and it sucked. And right next to the picture that I had up is where my back door to my porch is. And I would slam the door and the shelf would fall off and the glasses would break. These actually have a little tiny hole in the bracket. The screws go straight into the wall into the mounting hardware. They don't go anywhere. They're really, really great. Check them out if you need any sort storage potential. They are kind of small. If you look at what's in them, that was pretty much the only complaint, but I've seen them used for a variety of things on all the reviews and stuff, including people using them in the bathroom for various knickknacks and all. And what they do is they turn them upside down. And so you have your little knickknacks on top and that little metal rail there that holds all everything in case of falling off. They use it like hang hand towels and stuff. So it's actually a really cool, little product. It's not a survival product. It's not a prepper product, but it is a lifestyle design product. And it goes with the magnetic knife holder that I brought you earlier. That's kind of how I redid my cooking era there. So I don't get yelled at for leaving stuff laying all over the place. Anyway, with that, you can always help us out doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. Make sure you're aware, again, the AI class drops Monday and the workshop, the fall workshop here on my property. Those tickets go on sale next Saturday, the 19th. I'm telling you, if you wait more than 10 minutes, you're not going to get in this year. There's been so much interest in the event this year. And I just recorded a video today, but just to give you an idea of some of the stuff that we're going to be serving, we're breaking down a whole lamb on Thursday afternoon. Chef Ken's bringing a whole lamb, and it's already skinned and all, so you're not going to go through the slaughter process. We're going to have basically the whole thing in a giant cooler, and we're going to break it down into primals and subprimals. It's going to get roasted whole, though. In a cajachina that Nicole Sauce is bringing down. That should be amazing. I've put together some really awesome sausages. I talk about being an artist. Like, cooking for me is one of my forms of art. I've got a Thai style sausage I'm going to be making for you guys. I had a Jamaican sausage on the smoker right now, Jamaican jerk sausage. We got a ton of cool stuff. Golden oyster mushroom soup. That's just the food. We've got a great lineup of speakers. Nicole Sauce, Nick Ferguson, Joel Riles, Ken Daniels, myself, Sean Mills. We just have a great, great lineup this year. So please consider coming out. Those of you who are like, 1 year I'm going to get there, make this year your year. Tomorrow I'll catch you with an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. And then we'll do it all again.
Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.